Hey, it's Josh McDermott from The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Girl Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And this is Michael.
And I'm The Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl, episode 124. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show, The Walking Dead from AMC. And in addition to reviewing the show, we playlist our feedback, so join the conversation.
And speaking of feedback, if you want to give us that, you can send an email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. You can go to our website, thewalkingdeadgirl.com/voicemail, to see how you can leave us voicemail feedback. And also post a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewalkingdeadgirlpodcast. And at the end of the show, we read feedback on the air.
Before we get started, I want to remind you guys that we will be discussing every gory detail about the TV show. So obviously there will be spoilers. So make sure you've watched the current episode before listening.
I like this episode. It was, I know, an extension of the story again. You know, they're dragging it on as we have concluded that they want to stretch this season out a bit. Instead of seeing the confrontation come up quickly, they want to show us some little stories here and there. And this episode was Michonne and Rick going on a date or just having the time
Pretty
of their
much.
Life.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I felt like I was watching my mom and dad, so I was really grossed out with all the makeout scenes.
There was a lot of it. A lot of hot, steamy, sizzling.
Ew, stop.
Erotic.
Okay, Dad, enough. We get it. We get the idea. I thought it was really interesting. I think there was a lot of foreshadowing in this episode, particularly between Rick and Michonne, because of what they were saying a lot of the times and then what they showed.
Yeah.
With fooling us once again that someone died. And this time I really almost nearly thought it was real, because I'm like, this is so them to pull something right out of nowhere and kill Rick.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
A slow episode, and then all of a sudden the death out of nowhere, right?
Right. And of the most important character. I don't know.
Did it actually fool you? Did they actually fool you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because they just dragged it on.
And plus they showed Michonne's face, right?
And that was the same reaction I would have given if I was in that situation. And she just dropped the sword. And she was going to... It almost reminded me of, like, playing the Walking Dead game, Michonne. She has a lot of those moments where stuff happens to her and she just, like, can't handle it. And she just goes dead in the face. But I... That's what it felt like. That's why I kind of believed it. Although, I don't know. That made me uncomfortable knowing that Rick could have died. And I'm wondering if they're setting it up to sound like, or they're setting it up where, because they said, okay, Rick, Rick says, I want you to lead with me. Is that just so that we can get Rick off the map, or is that just a far-fetched theory?
Like you're trying to say that the writers are trying to say, hey, people get used to maybe Rick not always being here.
Exactly. I know that's a little far-fetched, but with this show, it's full of disappointing surprises. So I'm just waiting for the next shoe to drop.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting theory. And I think for me personally, what's holding... I mean, it was a time where the show kind of... Rick was holding the show together. Where,
yeah,
like you came every week to see Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's holding me to the show is the plot. Like to see where the whole...
This group.
Yeah, like when... The war, you know, and what's going to happen with the Savior. So the questions of, like, where do we see this plot going? And that's what's kind of keeping me in suspense and keeping me coming back to see what the conclusion is going to be on that.
I don't know if that's a good transition, though, because we started this podcast because of the characters and how amazing they were and how they deal with their environment. But I guess it's a natural part of evolution when the zombies are not a threat anymore and it's other people. And it becomes another kind of dramedy show.
Dramedy. That's an interesting.
That's a drama and comedy. Another drama show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I think that there are some characters, you know, that we're connected to, but don't know. I just, it's not, I guess because the show's been on for so many seasons that now we're kind of settled with all the characters, you know.
Almost,
but then,
jaded, yeah.
Yeah, but then there's some characters like Rosita, which come out of left field and kind of make you a little frustrated.
Like that she's disrupting the general flow of the characters.
Yes. She's the
fly. Because her motivations are unclear. But I will say the good thing about this episode, it made me feel more, I understand, I don't empathize, because I still think Rosita pisses me off, but I understand more of where Rosita is coming from,
mm-hmm.
In terms of her motivations and why she's making the choices she's making or saying the things she's saying. And I like how Tara was the only character to interact with Rosita and confront her.
Hmm.
Really, about all these thoughts that she's vocalizing about wanting to start already and just fight,
yeah.
And
there were some foreshadowing with Rosita and Sasha at the end as to what the direction of those two characters are gonna go.
Yeah, and it was really interesting to see how Rosita made the change from "we're not friends" to "I need your help to kill the leader of a group that potentially could lead us in a suicide mission."
Yeah, I think she's pretty much over Abraham now. Rosita is, I think.
No, she's not over him. She's fighting because of him, but she's over the differences.
Well, I don't think she can go. Right? Abraham was something that kept her going, and now that he's gone, she really has no purpose to live, really.
And that's why she's willing to kill herself.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite scene, although they're not my favorite characters, was Gabriel and Rosita. Because he said a lot of true statements, but we'll get into it later.
There was kind of three storylines. There was Tara, which was a minor one. There was Rosita, which was more major, and then the main one, which was Michonne and Rick. And then we'll go through that first, because that's the meaty part of the episode. cold open with the sun, a scene of the sun shining through the trees, like it's a brand new day.
Favorite couple doing couple stuff in the apocalypse.
They have
a montage.
Just like Fragile.
That was an inside joke when we were moving. I put that on all the boxes.
It came from that movie. The movie A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Did you watch it with us, or were you sleeping during Christmas? Because during Christmas, we watched a bunch of Christmas movies, and I don't know if
every day. Yeah. Every day.
So from Christmas Story,
I have a bad habit of falling asleep during movies when I'm at home, because I'm just so comfortable.
And anyway, the father character orders a lamp, he wins a lamp in some raffle or something.
Yeah, and it looks like a leg.
Yeah, it's classic. But on the box it says Fragile, and he doesn't know, so he says Fragile. Oh, it must be French. I love pronouncing Fragile Fragile.
Fragile.
So we have a montage. So le montage of le zombie and of le Michonne and le Rick scavenging and having sex.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Interspersed.
There's
some scavenging, some sex, some sex and scavenging. And there's having sex on top of the scavenged stuff. In the scavenging van. And they have a van that they drive around with.
Okay, enough with the sex.
And then they have a campfire.
Some important quotes, Dad, to remember. Is they have this thing where they say, Michonne says, "Are we going to win today?" Which is such a couple who work together.
And Rick says, "Are we going to have sex today?"
No, he does not.
Oh, okay.
Gosh, you make me feel so awkward.
You don't like talking about sex, Jasmine?
Not with you. Stop laughing.
They know how to make little campfires by the van.
Yeah, we're fighting the fight.
Oh, don't forget that fourth bullet point in the notes.
Oh my God, more sex.
Yes. Sorry, I had to put that there.
Yeah, but Michonne keeps saying, you know, we've been out here for 2 days. We need to start getting back. And this is where Rick says for the first time, but not the last time, a couple more days. And it's purely because he loves spending time with Michonne and being able to just alone time. And
Rick's like doing the whole, he's slick, man. He knows what he's doing. He knows.
It's Rick Grimes. He always knows. Remember when he was hitting on that hairdresser, Jessie, what's her name? She's dead now. I don't even remember her name.
I think her name was Jessie or something.
Yeah.
But he's pretty slick. He's like, you know, we got things happening here. Let's just keep it going. Like, what's the problem? Why would we have to go back home?
What I don't understand is, they robbed the Saviors.
Oh, that was cool.
Playing golf. I didn't even know there were Saviors until I was watching it a second time.
Yeah, because they were talking about Fat Joey.
Yeah. It's like, I'm sick of people keep talking about Fat Joey.
Yes, and I'm sick of hearing about Fat Joey in this series, okay? That's enough with Fat Joey.
Which is why they said Fat Joey, so we know they were Saviors.
Exactly.
That's the only reason why they put that in there. But what I thought was interesting was right before they rolled the credits, they had this really ominous music as they were driving out, which I thought was interesting because this whole time they had like a positive vibe with the going out and traveling together. And then they had this ominous music right before the credits.
Mm.
It doesn't make any sense. Maybe they were just doing that for the credits.
Interesting.
But yeah.
You noticed that when they stole the stuff from the Saviors, they stole the batteries for their walkie-talkie.
Yep.
Which, can't they find a charger to charge the batteries? You know, those batteries are rechargeable, by the way. They can charge them. But anyway, whatever.
Where are they going to put outlets, Dad? They don't have electricity.
They can get cigarette lighter adapters and plug it in the... Anyway, so while they're driving, they can be charging their batteries. Come on. They steal a bag of pretzels, and we notice that the bag of pretzels is the same brand as Dwight had. is that your sound of, hey, I know, we noticed something.
It's like, connections!
Something fired off in your brain. And it's the same brand, yeah, that Dwight dropped off with the beer. For a moment there, I didn't make the connection right away. I thought, they went to the same house that Dwight lived in and stole Dwight's pretzels, right? But then I had to rewind it and then pause it on the truck. So, because they showed the bag of pretzels on the Savior truck. Savior's got it good. You know, they're playing golf and everything. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, on their work hours.
Naughty, naughty.
Anyway, we go to the next, we skip over the next, you know, onto the next Michonne-Rick interaction. And this is where you were talking about earlier about the deer theme. He says, I owe you a deer.
Deer.
Deer. Oh my.
She goes out to kill it. And then Rick runs up like a good little boy and says, I'm going to see what's going on. I'm going to help. And then when they get there, the deer is gone.
They just so happen to stumble on this carnival full of ammunition and food. Look who's
sarcastic now. I thought I was the one who's sarcastic. Now you're becoming sarcastic now?
I'm just saying that it just so happens when they're not looking, they find something. They spent 2 days. All they found was T-shirts and batteries.
Well, the thing is, I don't want to jump to the end of the story, but that's one of the things that Rick tells Michonne. I know.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up.
It's like, you that found this place, basically. Like, Michonne guided them to find all these guns.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a sign to Rick that, hey, Michonne is a leader, or she knows the way, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And I, because Michonne has this thing that was started ever since she started accepting Rick's group as her own, and then talking to what's the leader before she died of Alexandria? What's her name?
Oh, Deanna.
Who the hell is Deanna? Yeah. I just tried to figure the quote because that's the only way I remember.
Who's Deanna?
Who's Deanna? Ever since Deanna was, Deanna planted a seed in Michonne's head telling her, figure out what you're going to do with your life. You know, what do you want out of life then besides just surviving? And I think Rick now is trying to instill that in Michonne, letting her know that, look, I want you to spend the rest of your life leading with me, which is almost, I feel like, I know this is a little spoiler jumping ahead, but I feel like when he asked her that, it was kind of like a proposal of some of sorts.
Yeah.
But it's to forward her storyline. I like her storyline. It's really interesting.
And Rick mentions that, hey, I owe you a deer from before outside the gate. And Michonne says, oh, yeah. remember when Negan came, Michonne was outside shooting. She shot a deer and by accident. She was bringing it back. And then Rick took it from her and gave it to Negan. She's like, oh, man.
And she was pissed off.
Yeah.
She
was like, really? Major.
She's like, are you serious? I worked hard for this. So he felt bad, obviously. Now that they're getting their power back, he needs to make up for some stuff. And it seems like I thought, well, we'll get to it. I'm getting excited, but I need to keep with the storyline. But yeah, they find this half military camp, half carnival gated area where there was a huge fight because Michonne made it clear by saying something big happened here. And they climbed to the roof to get a better look.
I think, what do you think happened there? Was it kind of like a...
I think it was like a camp.
Yeah, a camp.
That gone wrong. Yeah. This is probably right really, really early. If there's military people, it's probably right at the beginning. And it got overrun and it happened so fast that even the military guys saw their guns because they didn't even know. I think it's probably even before they knew how to kill them.
Yeah, maybe. And one thing we will see later, but we can mention it now, was some of the civilian people, walkers, had their hands tied, remember?
Oh, because maybe they were bitten or infected?
Either infected or they were causing a ruckus. And the military just put them in jail, in a quote-unquote jail, or like...
Kind of like in Fear the Walking Dead, how they quarantined them in these zones.
Yeah, kept them in isolation or something, and then they died and turned or something.
Yeah, but yeah, so they get on top of the roof and they see that this place is loaded with guns. They don't know if they have food yet, but they know that this is the jackpot.
Yeah, so when they're up there, the first thing I thought when they climbed up there is like, oh, they're going to fall through the roof.
Because you remember that episode with the helicopter on the roof and how it fell through and how weak these things are now.
Yeah, and they even said, Michonne said, oh, we shouldn't be up here too long.
Foreshadowing, almost feeding us the future.
And then they see all the walkers and the guns. And then Michonne wastes a bullet by shooting a target.
Well, this is a date, Dad, okay?
First of all, one thing that I hate in this show, they've done it before, but I just noticed it again, is... She shoots this high power, you know, sniper rifle, and it doesn't have any recoil, no kickback, nothing. She's just holding it like this and goes poof, and she's motionless. I mean, come on, it's not gonna like put her shoulder back or anything.
I know, that's so true.
It's just too fake for me. But anyway, she hits a target, and I added my notes here that this is significant because if you remember, she was on her little. She was outside the Alexandria on her own. Remember, she was doing target practice?
Yeah.
And she couldn't hit a thing.
Now she can. But then her guns got taken away, so she couldn't practice anymore. So I don't know how she got really good.
Well, I'll let that slide. But what I'm saying is, I guess this is a symbolism. That the fact that she was able to hit the target means that she's got her groove back kind of thing.
Yeah.
She's in the zone.
The morale really helps with situations like this and survival situations. So I'm pretty sure that the fact that they're going to rise up really inspires people to start caring and getting back into their own old selves again.
Yeah, and I think it's just symbolic. Like, they're trying to show that Michonne's okay now and she's good and she's in a better place than she used to be. And plus, being with Rick helps as well, right?
Yeah, and I just think maybe they're overdoing it even a little with the whole like, oh, cutesy, I'm so happy, everything's so happy, even though they haven't even fought anything yet.
Well, remember the...
Like, they're already won and they haven't done anything.
The showrunners said that we're going to have more escapades and more laughter and jokes, and it's going to be fun. The season's going to be exciting and whimsical.
I feel like it's getting a little fake now, but, you know, whatever.
Because we had the Eugene episode where he was... being a little weird.
That was funny.
Dorky.
That was funny.
And here we have Michonne and Rick kind of...
They're such serious actors and they're always serious all the time. It's hard for me to see them happy.
Especially Michonne. I've hardly ever seen Michonne laugh. It's very rare. She's like laughing left and right in this episode. Tons of laughter.
Kind of makes slapping. Her look less badass because she's so happy. Because badasses aren't happy.
How dare she be happy?
Yeah, and
write
yeah,
to your
so
congressman
they,
and complain. So yeah,
bottom line is
they're having fun.
Yeah, they're having fun and even have fun when danger almost approaches, because then obviously the roof collapses and they fall through. And they start laughing hilariously, like, ah, this is so funny. Because what are the chances that they land on something soft? And she's like, and then Michelle's like, this is a sign, right? And then Rick's like, it is. Look. Oh, got a bunch of ready-to-eat food boxes you got there.
Well, it says ready-to-eat on the box, so. Yeah, so there was a military.
And aren't they like
military rations?
MREs or?
Yeah. Meals ready to eat.
Mm-hmm. So, they're excited, and they have their to complete the date with a dinner, basically.
Yeah, and then they show the sun setting. So they started off with the sun shining and rising, and they go through the thing, and then they show the sun setting. Like, all is good in the world. We have guns.
Sure.
We found guns. We have food. We have each other. We have
in the back of my mind, I keep thinking, how long are they going to stall? Because don't the survivors, don't the saviors come back to collect food and stuff? When was it?
I know.
When's
so
the next
I don't
time they come back? They come back every week, don't they?
Randomly sometimes. They don't even have set times.
So all this time away is making me nervous. Like, okay, but you still have no food back home. So
well, no, remember they went to the trash heap people?
Jadis?
Yeah. And they took some of their food back. They gave them back some of their cans that they raided their pantry.
Yeah, but the amount of this food thing isn't adding up. How much food do they have to give away and to eat? Oh, yeah, they have farms. I forgot. No.
We don't have a accurate accounting of all the...
I would like a book full of how many crops
want detailed,
and food.
Detailed breakdown of cans.
Because are they starving or are they not starving? Okay, because when I went in there, it was empty. But then I realized, oh, Jadis' group has it. But when they put it all back in the car, it didn't look a lot. It didn't look like there was a lot.
It looked like two boxes or something.
I know. Anyway, this is me being picky. But I think we have the right to be picky. We've been watching the show for so long.
The point is that they're... Yeah, well, one good point that you make is, why are they delaying? So, like, why is it okay to delay coming back? Like, is Rick saying, yeah, we can hang out a few more days. There's no urgency. I guess he's, like, it contradicts with Rick saying, you know, we should do the right thing and we should do that for everybody and rise up. It contradicts that message with, yeah, let's just hang out for a few more days.
Yeah, that's like, why I thought, like, he was avoiding the problem.
Yeah.
Even though, which would give Rosita a reason why she would say, yeah, we've got the guns, but they're not ready because we need more guns and more people. It's just excuses.
Hmm.
At first, I was like, excuses. I'm sorry, but they're building an army. It takes time, patience, man. But then with Rick's attitude and the way he's been going about, you know, putting it off for a while, makes me feel that way. But I think it's just, but then there's also this confusing part where, after they have their dinner and he wakes up in the middle of the night in his head in his hands, like, he looks stressed. And I'm wondering if it's because at first I thought, oh, it's because he just doesn't want to face reality again. But then later he explains it's because he has emotions. He's still thinking about everything he's lost. And that's still a hard thing for him to deal with.
Because we have to remember that Rick is a human being. So let's talk a little bit about this discussion with as they're eating
by candlelight.
Their liquid food. Rick and Michonne eating by candlelight, yes. And then Michonne asks the question, after we get the weapons, then what? Which is kind of a big picture. Like, let's look into the future. Let's look at the big picture. And I have an audio clip of some of the stuff they talk about.
Which I think they shouldn't be eating the rations at all, considering the state that they're in, but that's neither here nor there.
Why? What do you mean?
Well, I don't want to waste any food.
Oh.
They're eating like cans and cans of stuff.
No, that's their reward. Let them have some fun. They have like, do you see how many boxes were there?
Dad, I'm a hard worker through and through. I won't even eat stuff that I find.
They're starving, Jasmine.
Well, they have to deal with it. And play the clip.
Negan ordered the world his way. It's up to us to reorder it once he's gone, right?
Well, different communities. I can figure it out together, how to keep going together.
Yeah, but somebody's gonna have to make that happen. Somebody will need to be in charge of that, right? It should be you.
Not me.
Why not? You could do it. You'd be good at it. And if it's something that you wanted.
Oh, I don't think I do. Or I would. But the two of us, you and me, reordering things together. I want that. If it's something you wanted.
Yeah.
Well, honey, it's about us. It's about the we, not the me. Yeah, he's using the classic line. We're on this together, dear.
Is that not true? What are you trying to say?
Because later on, he changes his tune. Like, yeah, we're together, but you know, if I'm gone, you gotta go on your own. You know what I'm saying?
What is this? What is this plan? What are you saying that is his plan?
I don't know. I'm just.
What is his motive? Why would he be slick about it? I'm trying to think. What is his ulterior motive, Dad? This makes sense. He's just trying to. He's trying to beat around the bush, saying that, you know, like, I want you by my side. Like, I really respect you as a fighter and as a leader. In Rick fashion, you know, like, not really admitting it, but letting her know. Does that make sense?
I think I understand what Rick is saying, really, because Michonne says, "Oh, you'd be a good leader." And stuff, and honestly, I don't think Rick is a good leader, because we've seen him many times in the past when he was a leader, it just went to the extreme, and it kind of backfired. And recently at Alexandria, who was the one who brought him back to reality? It was Michonne, right? Because she punched him, like, she knocked his blocks off. It's like, calm down.
I think maybe he realized that. That's why he wants her by his side, because she puts him in check.
Yeah, she kind of balances his, you know, his insanity, because sometimes Rick goes off out in the deep end, right? I think that's kind of what his point was, like, I can't do it by myself, because I think I need you to help me, keep me in check. But also, Michonne's idea of him being, of any one of them, even together, leading versus another option, what do you think of that? Do you think that's the best solution? Like, let's assume that the war happened and then everything is over. What does the new world order look like to you?
It's very interesting that they talked about this, because I feel like, well, there was this quote, I don't remember exactly, but it was from a rap song, actually. Everybody who is below trying to reach for the top, take down the leaders at the top. But then once they get to the top, they become the leaders that they fought so hard to defeat.
Mm. You listen to the rap, Jasmine?
I do. I listen to hip hop and R&B all the time. But yeah, it's just basically say you become what you fought, you know, you become what you hated. And I think it's easy for Rick, because we've seen it before. We've seen Rick get crazy with power. And
but we're the good guys.
Not recently, not since they killed all those people for no reason. The Savior Camp, they've gone over the edge a little bit. And, you know, they've kind of almost... I would say go far as to say they're almost disillusioned and thinking that their greatness and their power is a source of goodness. Well, if you look on the outside, who do these people look like? Yeah. You know, to us, we love them and we worship them because we've seen where they come from and they see themselves the same way. But who's to say from the outsider's perspective that they don't look just as bad as Negan's group?
Yeah, it was kind of hinted at several times in
especially with Gabriel when they first came to Alexandria.
In previous episodes, but assuming that kind of we win the war, I think it'll look a lot different than what it is now. I think the communities can't really live on their own. I don't think the communities, well, either they could live on their own, but with a different power structure. Because who's to say, like, another Negan type group isn't going to come in and take things over, right?
Yeah, that's true. I just think it's very interesting that they Michonne automatically assumes that Rick and now herself are going to lead all of the groups.
I mean, they are the ones that are organizing everyone.
Yeah.
Right? So they do have the right to say things like that because
they started it and they built up the resources to get it done.
It was their idea. Day,
it's their idea. Yeah. So that makes sense. Yeah, I just find it interesting.
Because someone could say, well, who are you to say that you're going to be the leader? Why should you be the leader? Like, who are you, right?
Yeah.
But if you think about all the things that they're doing and organizing, they're the ones that are doing all of this. And without Rick and Michonne and Alexandrian group, our group, doing all of this stuff, the other groups would eventually die out and get taken, consumed by Negan, right?
Yeah, so voting power goes to them.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too.
It makes sense.
So, yeah, then we, like we talked about, Rick is having his moment, having issues sleeping and stuff, and I automatically assumed it was because he just didn't want to go back to reality, but then I realized it's because he just thinks, he's just thinking about all the things that have gone wrong.
So we see a little bit of the playfulness when who has the most walker kills. Like, oh, you got 8 walkers. And it's like, why are you giving me 8 walkers?
He's like, you can handle 8. And I thought it was really funny because while Michonne was taking out these walkers like a champ, Rick spends like 10 minutes trying to pull one walker out of a freaking windshield.
I think that was the punchline is that.
Okay, I thought so too, because I'm like, how is he taking so long? Like, this is ridiculous.
I think that was the joke.
Walker's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the plan goes even worse when one of the armed walkers accidentally fires the weapon, and I thought, I was like, oh my God, what? I was like, how does Walker know this? And then I realized he was just being pushed against an object that fired the weapon.
Which, by the way, trivia...
Trivia! Yeah.
This is the first time in the Walking Dead mm-hmm. show history that a walker is actually firing a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So take that.
As you hold your mug and drink into it. And yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And then they took cover because their whole goal was to get the car in front of the gap in the fence to prevent more walkers from coming in so they can take out the ones inside. And so they overshoot it. Because the panic with the gun firing and Michonne gets into the trunk and then Rick's already in the car.
Which Michonne coming in through the car, I guess they folded the back seat down.
Yeah. And, but they kind of laugh about it. You know, they're like, yeah, this was a good plan. Yeah, it was a great plan. Like they don't really.
Yeah. The walkers are not a threat, Jasmine.
That's what I'm getting at. That's what I'm trying to get. And that's what I'm noticing.
They are and they aren't because they are because we thought that they ate Rick, but they aren't because they didn't eat Rick.
I think that's the trick of the writers. I think the writers made us feel so comfortable with the ideas of the walkers not being a danger anymore that when something actually goes wrong, you're like, oh my God, you freak out because you almost feel safe. And knowing that they can handle it, but when they can't, that's when it gets scary. So I thought it was kind of like a ploy.
Yeah, they both feel confident because in the next scene, as they escape the car, they just get on the roof and they run away. Rick says,
and they split the walkers,
and then they realize, okay, this is maybe beyond our control. And then Rick says, well, we can take them, we can continue this and take them, or we can go. And Michonne says, you want to go? And Rick says, no, we can take them. And Michonne says, yeah, I know, we can take them. Like, yeah, there's like confidence, right?
Confidence, yeah.
Yeah, so they're trying to show that how overconfident they are in their abilities.
They don't learn, do they?
Well, if you notice that this is kind of in a contrast to previous botched scenes where, remember when Rick and Daryl stole the truck and then it sank into a lake?
Yeah.
With Jesus?
Uh-huh.
So that was started off great. Like, hey, look, we found this truck full of stuff. And then it ends up in the lake. So this is in contrast to that because it turned out well, right?
Yeah.
In the end.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, they're really confident in their skills. And then Rick notices the deer that they spotted earlier. And he says,
which, by the way,
he's like, I got to impress my mate. I got to get the deer for her.
Yeah, which, by the way, was a horrible CGI.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Drawing. Hey, you notice that? It looks so fake.
I know.
That was embarrassingly fake. Like, really, guys? That's the best you could do?
I mean, they got a tiger and they can make a tiger look good, but you can't make a deer look good?
I mean, that was horrible. Like, I don't know what's going on sometimes. I mean, they talk about these amazing special effects and some of them are really awesome and like the walkers.
It seems like the only good thing about the graphics is the walkers. Yeah, that's because they've got the best guy on it, Frank Nicotero.
But not only that, actually, surprisingly, a lot of the guts are when when they show the walkers are CGI, but you don't even notice it because it looks so real, right?
Because that's what they do. The show is about zombies, so of course the graphic designers are going to be top notch.
They perfected the walker guts. But the CGI deer like kind of really threw me out of the scene. To the point where they show the scene where like Rick is looking at the deer, and I'm like, what is he looking at? Like I didn't even see the deer there. It was so blended I only noticed in the second time. I'm like, what is he looking at? You know? I was kind of confused. I was thrown off.
So he finds the CGI deer.
He aims to
shoot it, but something gives way because he's on the Ferris wheel or something.
Well, he pauses because he sees the walkers coming
towards him. So he just wants to kill it, and then they want to go and eat him.
Yeah. He didn't want the walkers to eat the deer.
But yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter because he falls off the freaking Ferris wheel and he gets cornered by all the walkers. And of course, Michonne notices this, but from a distance, and she comes rushing over, and all she sees is the walkers crowding around Rick, which it looked complete. I don't know how he survived that. That's like a Glenn under the dumpster move because there's no way that he got into the opposite side of the walkers without Michonne noticing it or us noticing it. And the deer ran away.
Did it? Or was it just standing there? We don't know.
I saw the deer dart as soon as he fired the gun because he missed, obviously, right?
Hmm.
And I don't know. I don't know, whatever.
Well, yeah. So there was a box that he hit into. And then, yeah, it was definitely a Glenn moment there. Dumpster moment.
Yeah.
So Michonne loses it and turns into slow motion. We hear the ringing in her ears. Sound becomes muffled. She drops, dummy sad. Dropping the katana is kind of that moment where it's over. Because that is her source of power, right? Mm-hmm. She has that in her hands. If she dropping that is like surrendering, it's like giving up, basically.
Yeah,
Well, Michonne's going to die too. That's what I thought.
Me too, because I'm like, it's going to be just like the Jesse and the Cookie Boy scene where as soon as Cookie Boy died or like
Cookie Boy, older brother
died, Jesse's like, and she just got bitten and attacked.
Once Cookie Boy got it, the whole family went down. Once you have one Cookie Boy, you can't stop. You got to get...
Why did they bring up Cookie Boy
for? Got to eat the whole box.
Anyway, then Rick comes out of the cuts. Out of the cuts. That's what I call like out of nowhere, out of the woodwork.
Okay.
Out of the cuts. He comes out of the cuts and he goes ham on the walkers and throws Michonne's sword back, giving her power. And she's like, rejuvenated, and then just like starts hacking away.
Yep.
Like she got a power up.
She was crying and then laughing.
Yeah, I went from extreme, I'm gonna kill myself, Michonne, to elation and joy and relief.
Yeah.
And I just did not like feeling that Rick was gonna die, is all I'm gonna say. But then after that big climax of this whole endeavor, they have another montage of them collecting the guns and killing the walkers.
It made for a very quiet drive back home.
But yes, because there's a moment when they're like looking, picking up the guns and stuff and searching the dead walkers. The Michonne is just like,
well, it's,
she puts her hands in her face now.
Well, the thing is in contrast, cause they were all happy and playful and all that, but up until that moment. And then after that moment, the whole mood changed completely. Right. It became quiet and subdued. And obviously Rick picked up on it. You know, sometimes guys can't tell. It's like, what's wrong, dear? Why are you so quiet? Why aren't you talking? Well, did I do something wrong? Did I do something wrong? What did I do? Tell me. Well, if you don't know what you did, then I'm not going to tell you.
Classic. Sounds like a conversation you've gone through before, Dad.
Never. And then, so he decides to pull over and have a talk.
He knows why she's upset.
Yeah,
this is one of the situations where he understands because she thought she lost him, and so he wants to talk about it. And they talk about it, and she says she doesn't like the fact that she could lose him. He says, "I don't want to lose you."
Well, the thing is that Michonne was. We'll have an audio clip that we'll play, but before she says that, Rick, she's like looking out the window and down, and then Rick says, "I haven't been sleeping, thinking about what we lost, thinking about my friends. Glenn saved me." right at the start, and he did, right? He saved him from the tank with certain death, because he was basically stuck in that tank.
Because he thought it was smart to have a horse and ride into city, like a cowboy.
And then and he says, I couldn't save him. And I didn't understand if he said it's normal being stuck on it. I know that we went through something. This doesn't cure it. This doesn't cure it, meaning collecting all these guns and doing this doesn't cure the problem.
Yeah.
Well, like,
or the pain that he feels.
Or like them going out and searching for having a fun together doesn't solve it, doesn't cure it. I guess. Was he trying to say that the reason why I want to hang out for more days with you is because I was hoping that this moment of us together would erase away the pain?
That's exactly what I was saying, that he doesn't want to go back because he doesn't want to think about reality.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of people deal with when they have pain. They don't want to face the pain. They want to run away from it. That's why they do all these crazy things and they stay as happy as they can doing all these crazy stuff, when really they just need to face it. And I think that's what he was doing, because at night he would wake up and he would think about everything he's done and like everything that's happened. And he was sitting on top of an RV surrounded by walkers with an axe, being yelled at by the man who killed and terrorized his friends. And it was his fault. He led them into that. So of course he has some guilt, and you know, of course he wants to run away from that, which is why he keeps saying, come on, a couple more days, a couple more days. But he realizes that, you know, I could have gone a couple more days, but without finishing that sentence, he basically said, but I can't anymore.
Mm.
It's not the right choice. I have to go back. We've got to.
It's not the right approach.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to play the clip?
Mm-hmm.
You asked me what kind of life we had just surrendering. It wasn't the life. What we did back there, what we're doing now, making a future for Judith, for Glenn and Maggie's baby, fighting the fight. That's living. You showed me that. You can lose me.
No.
Yes, you can. I can lose you. We can lose our friends, people we love. It's not about us anymore. It's about a future. And if it's me who doesn't make it, you're going to have to lead the others forward.
Because you're the one who can.
How do you know?
Because you led me here.
This is where I got the foreshadowing that, like, oh, Rick is going to die and Michonne's going to have to take over.
Mm.
But I think this was more about Michonne having to find a place in society now and figure out what her purpose is in life. Yeah. Hopefully, I think that's what it is, not the other way around.
Maybe she realized that her purpose is closely intertwined with Rick's being there, right? And then maybe that's the problem, right? She's so close to Rick now that maybe her purpose is Rick. Is to, you know what I'm saying? It's,
yeah.
I don't know how to say it, but
her purpose is to help Rick.
Or like, sure, or maybe I should say, Rick gives her life, kind of thing, you know. And if Rick's not around, she doesn't have that life force anymore to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So she has issues too, right? She has to figure out how to go on when he's gone. Because she can't just drop her katana and commit suicide because Rick died. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Because then I'd be mad at her. That'd be a horrible way to lose Michonne.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know. Michonne's my favorite character. I don't know,
yeah, she's quickly becoming... She's always been my favorite. She's just always been this constant in the sea of chaos, you know?
Yeah.
And she grows the most, I think.
Yeah, and her character is like pretty solid. She's had some crazy moments, but not like Rick has kind of been all over the map a little bit, but Michonne's pretty stable.
Yeah, he's been all, but because she's already been through the worst of the worst with her kids and her past. So she's and with Andrea, remember how they were close and then she lost her.
Yeah.
So she's been there, done that. And Rick is just Rick. He's like a dramatic kid, man. He's just explosive.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So he's not, so they're going back. So all this fighting and getting the guns, I'm like, okay, problem solved. Jadis wanted guns and they got the guns. However, it's
not enough guns.
Jadis wants more guns.
Of course she wants more freaking guns because it's a game to her.
It was weird negotiation.
I feel like,
but
it's almost like she's testing them. You know what I mean? Because she said, okay, fine, 10 guns and you keep the cat.
Yeah, the cat that Rick stole for Michonne.
But she thinks this is all very entertaining. But it does make sense. They need more guns for everyone. If she says there are not enough guns, there's not enough guns. You just go get more guns.
Well, it sounded like she, with her very few words that she used, it sounded like she says, yeah, you got the guns to fight this war or something. But
I want guns for me later.
For future, like, or have extra guns. Or I just didn't understand exactly what she meant. But
yeah.
Like, there wasn't enough for kind of long-term sustainability, I guess.
They need to go back out and get more guns.
So Rick was saying, like, they go down to, like, 10 guns, and then Rick says, no, 20 guns, and then say yes. Like, 20 guns, I keep the cat and say yes. It's like, okay, yes. Like, I didn't... It was a weird negotiation where they started from 10, and I thought, like, Rick was, like, not even going to get his 10 guns. And then he says, no, 20. And then, like, more forceful, and then say yes. So it was a weird kind of thing where Jadis capitulated, I guess, is the word, to the 20. And and don't forget, like, the say yes was what she told him initially to get the deal. She says, say yes. Rick says yes. So now he switches it around and says, say yes to her.
I think she appreciates that. I think that's maybe why she said yes.
Yeah. So the fewer words you use, the better it is to negotiate with Jadis.
Because you get the lingo.
And then Michonne has a little chat with Rick. Says, hey, just a few more days. You got a few more days now. Find more guns. You can hang out with me a little bit more.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have the only Tara scene.
Are we done with the Rick and Michonne?
We're pretty much wrapped up with Rick and Michonne's dating life for now. And we go over to Tara, and she's talking to Judith, who I don't like scenes where people are talking to babies. It's like such a cop out for self reflection.
Well,
babies can say anything.
Well, you know, she's not really talking to Judith. She's talking to herself.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. But she's debating whether or not she should tell Rick where these women are that she encountered a few episodes back. Because the reason why they wouldn't let her leave when she stumbled onto them is because she didn't want to let other people, they didn't want her to tell other people about this community because they're trying to hide from the saviors. But then I just, what offset me about this was the transition from dramatic music from Rick and Michonne to dramatic music from Tara. It was just too fast of a transition because there was dramatic music and then Tara scene, there's no music. And then the same piano. I was like, I got sick of it. I don't know why. It was just really annoying.
Yeah, well, The Walking Dead uses that two note piano thing.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of
overkill.
It gets tiring a bit. Judith is cute though, isn't she?
Oh my gosh, I know.
She's like looking up at her. I can just imagine like people in the background, like that are trainers or whatever. Baby handlers or whatever they call them. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, now look here. Okay, look over there. You know?
Like, look at this toy. Oh, have to be really quiet and everything.
Judith, and then she gives her the bracelet. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, symbolic because notice whenever like there's a question that Tara doesn't feel comfortable answering, she always rubs her bracelet like, no, I don't know where there's any more guns. Sorry, can't help you.
She's obviously touching the thing that is the lie, you know, like, yeah.
And the fact that she gives Judith the bracelet, I think is
her accepting that she has to face.
Yeah. She's because the bracelet is a symbol, right? Holding onto it means holding onto the secret. Releasing the bracelet, letting it go, right?
But she released it to a baby, which means that it's going to go into good hands. Right? But
I don't know what the baby part means, but yeah.
I thought this was a little cheesy, but I do think it's true. Maybe it's cheesy because the way Tara delivered it, but she said, what makes our life worth more than theirs? Because we want to stop the people who are hurting us, who are hurting other people.
Yeah, so she's trying to justify why they would confront the oceanside, I don't know what they're called, but...
Yeah, oceanside, we're going to go with that. But it's like, Because she says they have a right.
Yeah.
They have a right to not want to fight with us. Who says they have to? But the moment that they find out that people know about them, they're going to fight anyway to defend themselves because they don't trust anyone.
Well, the thing that she's worried about in her logic, the thing she was arguing about, which I'm sure she's thought of this before, but I guess she's vocalizing it so that, because who's she going to tell? She can't tell anybody. The only person she can tell is Judith, because Judith doesn't comprehend what she's saying.
Judith, it's kind of a
smart way of the writers to have Tara talk out loud about this conundrum.
Yeah.
Because she'd just keep it in her head. She's no way of talking to anybody. So us, the audience, have no way of knowing what she's thinking until she talks to Judith, which is kind of smart, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
But she's thinking, well, when Rick shows up, they're going to start attacking Rick and our group because they're the enemy, right? Or they don't, strangers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be another war between Oceanside and Alexandria or whatever. So that's what she's worried about, right? But then I think we realized that she did make up her mind and she wants to tell Rick, because then Rick comes to see her and ask her about Rosita. And then Tara says, I have something to tell you.
And obviously she told them about the group, because they need more people and they need more guns. And we know they have both. And that's the end of Tara's storyline. But a little bit of Tara goes back to Rosita at the beginning of the show, of the episode, is where Rosita is either, is she taking out the stitches or she's putting in the stitches for her cuts? I wasn't sure.
She's taking them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Tara was going to help her, and you know, instead they just get into this dispute, saying, you know, look, you got to relax, chill out. It's not about you. And she's basically, the conversation ended with Rosita saying, you know, I'm going to go.
Go get some guns.
I'm going to go get some guns because I'm sick of staying here.
One thing that I noted was that, you know, when Tara gave her the cream for her face, yeah, Rosita rejected it.
Because she wants to bear the mark of her decisions. Yeah.
Yeah. Because don't forget, the reason why she got that scar, because she got it on purpose. Like, she forced herself onto the knife.
Mm-hmm. Because it's willing to show how fast she can sacrifice herself.
Yeah, she wants to kind of suffer for what's going on. Like, she wants to feel the pain. Like, she wants to get into, and she wants to, you know, get into it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little radical, though, in my opinion, which we've already talked about. It's just, it's not clear-minded. It's her judgment is clouded.
She doesn't, she's not on a path. She doesn't care as much about her life anymore, I don't think.
But I liked what Gabriel said, and we'll talk about it later. It's just like, it's so easy to put yourself on the line.
We can talk about it now.
She goes to Father Gabriel
after she finds a toy gun. So
she realized she went out all day looking for this and it didn't find it.
Yeah, that scene was not much to talk about, but she basically found a toy gun, and she got mad.
Yeah, all that worked for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes back to Father Gabriel and says, I didn't find anything, in your case you were wondering. And if I had my way, Negan would be dead. But she said, but I'm stupid enough to follow what you said and missed my opportunity. And then Gabriel's mm-hmm. like, I'm glad you were and that you did.
Because
you're alive. And if the thing I have to carry with me is that you're alive, then I will carry that burden. But you wouldn't be coming to me unless you were having some doubts in yourself, which is what I believe he was saying. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, because she says, basically he's trying to tell her, well, why are you coming in here and yelling at me? Because, like, you know.
Yeah, it's not my fault. You made the choice.
It's like, okay, well, if you believe that, then see you. Bye. Stay away. Then I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, he says, I only say things about people's lives, because he says, all you do is tell people about their lives. He's like,
well, you
I only say that when they come to me. I don't search out for you to give you a reckoning. Okay, you come here for yourself.
Yeah.
Anybody who comes to church seeking something and they have a guilty conscience, they're looking for answers, and I'm going to give the answers. Because she said, and he also said, it's easier to be dead, and if you live, then I can live with that. Yeah, because it's easier for her to say, like, oh, I'll commit suicide, but it's harder to work in a group and to put her own feelings aside for the greater good instead of killing herself for the greater good. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what his point was, but she obviously wasn't getting it, because she said, she thought, oh, I don't regret taking that shot. What I regret was not doing it sooner. And I'm going to go back out there and finish the job. Instead of thinking about her, how her decisions have caused all these terrible consequences. She thinks because she didn't follow through with her plan, that's why Olivia and Spencer are dead.
Yeah, because she could have prevented it earlier, I guess.
But she doesn't realize it's because she made that is why they died. Not because she didn't do it sooner. It's because she did it at all. Which is what I'm getting at. Which is why it makes sense why she was so backwards in her objectives. Why I thought she was backwards in her objectives is because she still thinks she was in the right the whole time. And that it wasn't her fault that they were dead.
Right.
Which I thought stupid, but you know.
No, I think the Rosita and the Sasha character both are on kind of a path which has the same conclusion. Mm-hmm. Well, the identical conclusion is that they're both going to die, I think.
I think so, too. What does Sasha have to live for?
Nothing, really.
Besides Maggie.
Yeah, because if you think about it, she is always thinking about how to get to Negan and kill Negan. And in fact, not telling Maggie, right? Because she doesn't want Maggie to stop her. And so she's kind of in the same situation as Rosita mindset, right? Got to kill Negan, right? So
that's why Rosita goes to the hilltop. And then they find her at the grave. And, you know, Sasha was like, oh, what, are you here to pay respects? And she's like, I need your help.
This is why I said, you know, she doesn't care about Abraham anymore, or she's not mourning him anymore because of that line right there. This is like, she's a single purpose. Like, I came there like, no, I don't really care about the grave stuff, really. I just want to get Negan.
I want to avenge their deaths already.
Yeah.
Sasha already immediately got it. I don't know how they have a telepathic conversation or something, because how the hell did Sasha know what Rosita wanted when she got the message from Rosita that we're not friends? So I don't know how she went from A to B with that information, but whatever. Who cares?
Well, because they have this commonality of Abraham's death. And I think,
but Rosita made it clear that it doesn't mean anything.
Right. But they both have the same idea about what the, not solution, but what the kind of the, for revenge, right? They both have the revenge in their head.
That is
and
true.
And so when she said, I need your help, she kind of processed like, okay, what would she need me help with? The only thing left is this whole Negan thing, and that must be it. So that's what she...
Yeah, and I think she took Gabriel's advice and twisted it into her own perspective, because Gabriel said, you can't do it alone. So she went out and sought some people. Sasha wanted to take the shot to kill Negan, and Rosita said, okay. It kind of reminded me of like a scene from Kill Bill or something. You know,
no, but the thing is, you said that they didn't say anything like, I'm here because I need your help. And then Sasha didn't say, oh, you want me to... She just jumped to the next point, was like,
yeah,
I get to take the shot.
Yeah. And I guess this is also just based off their acting and just reading their faces, and they can tell like, okay, I know what you're here for, but based on your body language and stuff, she looked like she's ready to fight and all that. So they have this awesome sniper rifle, and Sasha's like a little kid looking at candy.
Well, you know, Sasha's a really good shot, right?
Yep. And so that was kind of to sweeten the deal.
Yeah. Well, actually, I like this dialogue, because a lot of the time in the past, we've seen The Walking Dead kind of
over-explain,
spoon feed us and hold our hands through things. And I'm glad that it's like, yeah, okay.
It was a little too late.
I get it.
Too late. I think they should have done that throughout the whole episode instead of, because then it just doesn't make sense now. But it's a great, I love this dialogue. It reminds me of Kill Bill, because this is exactly how Kill Bill is like, the dialogue. The women know what they need and to do.
Yeah. The sniper rifle is really awesome. It has like a huge scope on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the magnification on that is incredible. So I'm wondering if they're thinking of going like from a far distance and finding him.
Well, they did talk about saying it was going to be a one-way trip. So maybe Rosita was going to go down and like clear him out, and Sasha was going to take it, and they're going to find out who the sniper is and then shoot her.
Well, that's why I said that this is... The conclusion is for both of them to die because of this dialogue, because they're saying, you know what this means, right? Like, there's no turning back. Like, we're going in deep and we're going to get him, but we're not coming back alive. This is it. Like, we're going to get them, but we're both going to die, basically.
They can't catch us alive if it's a one-way ticket.
Right. And they also mentioned that Daryl, Carl, and Jesus has given them information.
Well, they didn't give them. They have memorized the plans.
Because it's not like they said to Daryl, hey, Daryl, we want to go there. Give us the plans.
No, they snuck in and
deviously
took the plans.
I don't know.
They said, took the plans and memorized.
Yeah, she went over to Daryl and said, hey, Daryl, so I think you were in some jail thing, and
how did it look like?
Describe it.
What
was the name of that? What was that name
poetry.
Of that song that you were listening to? Easy Street. Yeah.
Oh man, I liked how Eugene liked that song.
I know.
But yeah, that pretty much wraps up this episode, because that's our climax, is that they both agree to fight Negan, which I don't know when's going to happen. How many episodes do we have left?
This was episode 12, I think.
Yeah, it was.
And we have 16 in the season.
Yeah, overall, this episode was a little slow, but it was full of a lot of information, exposition and stuff.
They elaborated on the Rick and Michonne relationship. I thought it was fun. I liked that.
I like that too. Yeah, that was good. I'm excited for what the next episode is. I don't really watch the previews anymore, because since I don't watch it live, and I just like being surprised anyway and not assuming.
I saw a little bit of the preview of the next episode. I think Carol is not going to be laid back and accepting everything and hiding away.
Okay.
I think Carol is going to be coming out and getting a little bit active, more active. So we'll see what happens with Carol. Because even though she says, don't bother me, get off my lawn. Leave me alone. Everyone loves the Carol character, so I don't think they're going to let her just hide away. They might.
No,
they
want to no bring way. Her. They have big plans for her.
So we'll see what happens with Carol. Hopefully she'll get into things a little bit more now.
Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends and everyone you know. We'd love to get new subscribers. You can send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive.